All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, September 29th. I am Doug Norrie. That is...
James Davis.
Nice, buddy. You always. How long do you think about how you're going to introduce yourself before each podcast?
That one came right off the top, actually. I was thinking, well, my first instinct was to do the part one where I interrupt you, but I did that one, I think, just in the very last podcast.
Yep.
So I had to come up with another one right off the fly. So here we are.
You bring hot fire each time. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you build lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You can go over to the site. Sign up now for our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which helps or calculates optimal lineups for you for those two sites. Also access to our state-of-the-art player lab, which is really rounding into form now as we get more and more NFL information from this season. That's just $29.95 a month. That also includes our MLB projections. And when the season starts, it'll also include NBA and NHL all together as well. We house all of our projections under one subscription. We don't section it off by site and sport like some other outfits do. You pay that one price, you get everything that we have. Go over to the site now, dfsr.com/LAB lab. Sorry if my voice is a little scratchy. I don't really have any good reason for that.
That's okay, man.
Okay, we're going to talk some week four. So tomorrow we'll get into our full game-by-game breakdowns. Today we're just going to simply talk about some of the picks that we wrote up in our main article that went up on the site yesterday. A couple pieces of news before we get to that. Dez Bryant is going to not play this week. His MRI, I guess, came back. He's got something wrong with him, microfracture of something or other.
That was a great report, dude. You're real Stefania Bell over there.
Yeah, I'm like a combo deal, kind of like a Schefter with the news, and then Bell with just the straight up medical advice. Mm. Like just like a something with. I mean, who really cares what's wrong with the guy if he's not playing?
How dare you, dude? A lot of people care. I mean, I care.
You don't care. Okay, so what? He's not playing this week. What do you see? We talked a little bit about this off the air in terms of how we're going to redistribute his targets for the Cowboys. He was starting to trend in the right direction. Dak looking more in his door his way. There was clearly some scripted stuff where the Cowboys were intent on getting him the ball, especially early in games, probably from a skill level / just keep him mentally kind of checked in to what's going on with their offense. Where do you see some of those targets going now?
Well, I think it's interesting that Cole Beasley has still out-targeted Dez. You know, through the first three games of the season. Now, he and Bryant run very different routes. Beasley's much more of an up-the-middle guy who's just going to catch balls out of the slot. And Dez, of course, is the big play guy there. And, of course, they do run some shorter stuff for Dez as well. But I do think that Beasley will get some of that redistribution. A guy we've seen rise to prominence in the past when Dez has been out has been Terrence Williams. But he doesn't really seem to have much rapport with Prescott so far. So it's sort of hard to imagine him making any kind of huge leap. And then, of course, there was Witten from week one. I mean, Witten's production has dropped off dramatically since week one. But I suspect he'll kind of fill in as well. Overall, I would suggest that probably we're looking at a more conservative game plan from the Cowboys this week, especially against San Francisco, who has less than a dynamic offense themselves. So, yeah, don't be surprised if the Cowboys' plan is just to grind it out with Ezekiel Elliott and the ball control guys and hope the game ends quick.
Yeah, that's kind of where I went. I mean, we bumped all those other guys' targets up just a tad. I wasn't willing to make any of them like an elite double-digit target guy by any means.
I think that's right.
But I did actually bump up Elliott's carries and a target by a few just because I think, you know, they leaned really heavily on him last game. I think he had like 30
carries. Right. That's a lot.
The Cowboys don't know what they're doing. But the but if that's going to be the case and they want to play against, you know, sort of a team that against San Francisco that has upped its pace somewhat dramatically this season with Chip Kelly, you know, they're still coming in okay DVOA-wise on defense, but I think that it's more of just – you just more, see more of the Elliott train rolling than you just see these guys getting 10 carries. The other piece of news – I mean, I guess this isn't as big as the Dez thing, but it looks like Rashad Jennings is not going to play Monday night against the Vikings. He'll sit out another game with a hand issue. It's a little less it's a little less timely only because the main slates for most sites do not include – or both main slates do not include that game, so – you're not really pressed to find information on them early. That being said, if he weren't to play, we already know Shane Vereen is out for the year. Does Orleans Darkwa? Well, this is the best part about the NFL season when we get into the like week three when you start considering guys that you've never heard of before. Like you, this is a, and by the way, we've heard of him now.
I think you're speaking hypothetically about the would-be listener out there, right?
I'm speaking about like in your preseason draft. Sorry, let me reference the time frame. Like in your draft. You were not, no person had ever really, except for like the hardcore Giants fan, had ever heard of Orleans Darkwa. And now in week three or week four, you're considering him. That's more what I mean. I didn't mean,
I've been following him since he was at Nashville High, obviously. I know for you, you maybe only picked up on him when Tulane around that area. Maybe when he went undrafted in the draft that year he was drafted.
Are you on Pro Football Reference or are you just on his wiki?
And the stupid thing doesn't even have the year he was drafted. So thanks a lot.
What about Darkwa? You know, the Giants ran him 10 times last game when Vereen did go down. They played him also before Vereen got hurt also. So they had sort of committed it, though they were going to rely on Vereen now. It looks like, you know, the coach says maybe a committee thing. Where do we put Darkwa?
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable proxy for this, actually, is what we saw from the Giants in week one, because they basically have the exact same situation, but with two completely different guys. So in week one, it was Rashad Jennings and Shane Vereen, where we saw Jennings get 75% of the carries and Vereen get most of the targets out of the backfield. Now, you know, Jennings got 18 carries in that game and Vereen saw 5 targets. I suspect that that's about what we'll see here from Bobby Rainey and Orleans Darkwa. I mean, Darkwa has been effective running the ball, obviously in a very limited sample size. But Bobby Rainey, I mean, while the Giants probably like him well enough, I mean, he's on their team, they're not going to like him as much as Shane Vereen. Vereen was really like a trusted, almost feature, you know, running back 3 or whatever, like the guy who comes in on third down. So I think that Bobby Rainey will not take as much of Darkwa's workload as Vereen did from Jennings. That's just a gut call there based on what they did last week. But yeah, I mean, on FanDuel, Darkwa's 4,500. I think that's a terrific value for a guy who, I mean, we were considering Jennings in a very similar role in my mind at 2,000 more than that, right? So I think that he's going to be a big, big, big time play, assuming no more news comes out before you have to lock him in.
Yeah, my concern obviously is not, well, I mean, Darkwa aside, is that Minnesota is actually pretty, really good on defense. They're 4th overall in DVOA against the rush. Now, the volume might trump it if they're going to just give him the ball 18 to 19 times in the game.
Way to try to plug your boy Trump. That was a good one.
Oh, did I say Trump? Got it.
Doug and I have been arguing off the air. Doug loves Trump.
Don't even say things like that. People won't believe you. By the way, I don't like anyone political, so I don't want to think that's like not
an endorsement. You thought he crushed it in the debates, you were saying. I was disagreeing in the way you can with a political zealot.
This is a good way to just lose listeners, and it's unclear who we're gonna lose from this, but it will be somebody. Like, it'll be somebody. There's three different factions of people that we could lose from just simply that, and it could be all three. Okay, so anyway, I get concerned a little bit when you're going against just a good defense. That's mostly it. I think there's other trusted situations. I'm not maybe as high on Darkwa, even with the currents. Even if I knew he was going to be the feature back and at 4,500, there's enough for me to distrust. I think
he's going to be the feature back with no one else there at 4,500. You have to play him. I mean, yeah, it's a hard matchup or whatever, but 4,500 is stone cold free. And just a guy who's going to get all the carries for a team, it's just worth more than that. Like the baseline of what a guy's worth.
Let me give
in
you
any matchup. He's the feature back on a team is like probably 53 or 5,400. So it's free value. It is a bad matchup and there is a committee. So there is a discussion here, but I think that he's still a very, very good play.
I just want to say something real quick and then we can do maybe a no halftime challenge of this and then we'll get into the picks. But right now we have Orleans Darkwa for 15 carries and 2.5 targets. Okay. Reasonable. Right now for FanDuel, he is the 4th highest just points per dollar guy. And the guys in front of them are worth more. So Jordan Howard, Melvin Gordon, and Lamar Miller, we have all for better value relative to their price. Do you feel like that's correct? And then B, why don't you tell, we can do a no halftime challenge. Tell us a little bit about no halftime and I'll give you one.
All right. So no halftime is a new app that's available for this NFL season. And, you know, it's an app that both Doug and I use. We like very much, really slick interface. And it's a different take on daily fantasy sports. So what it allows you to do is to create a challenge where you just pick a player and you pick someone who you think they're going to be better than. So classic barroom argument, I'll take Darkwa this week. I'll take insert guy who's going to be worse than Darkwa, you know, Bobby Rainey or whatever. And then you can just put the challenge out to the world. You can select how much that contest is for, so very customizable. And then you can see if someone takes it. Another great way to use No Halftime is simply to go in there and check out the challenges people have already issued to the world. A lot of homers in there, a lot of people issuing challenges that are very, very soft. Works for both baseball and the NFL, and I assume for NBA when that comes live too. So you go to nohalftime.com, download the app, use promo code DFSR25, and you can get 100% bonus up to a $25 deposit. So hope to see you on there. Sweet product and cool guys.
So this might be a halftime challenge. Would you take Orleans Darkwa, who you seem to be very bullish on, or Jordan Howard, who's also kind of moving into a similar situation where he could just be the lone back and maybe.
I'll take Jordan Howard.
Okay, so if you're taking Jordan Howard for 1,100 more than Darkwa, and you said it pretty easily. This is where I don't think Darkwa is just as easy of a play. Do you know what I mean? Like where if you
that's not it because that's a misevaluation on the importance of $1,100 in salary. I mean, $1,100 in salary is the difference between Antonio Brown and Allen Robinson. You know, like that's $1,100 is huge on FanDuel.
Well, let me put it a different way then. If you take right now our FanDuel lineup is projected for 141.77 points. Mm-hmm. That's with Jordan Howard in it. Like, unclear if it's going to stick like that. With the one with Darkwa is almost 3 points less. Does that strike you as correct?
I mean, I haven't looked exactly at the carry situation on Darkwa yet, so it's a possibility that Howard. I mean, it's a possibility that Howard's a better play based on the other guys you can plug in around him. I'll definitely allow that. And looking at their projections, I mean, we have Howard for 4 whole points more than Darkwa. That kind of seems wrong to me, frankly. But, again, without diving into the formula, that's hard to figure out.
The only reason I bring this up on the air is because, like, this is the kind of thing that we do a lot off the air also. So
yeah,
we spend a lot of time with these kind of just like not arguments, but just like debates about like what seems correct with the team. So that's more the reason I was kind of putting you on the spot about that.
Well, what seems correct and then just trying to figure out, again, if the inputs are correct.
Right.
And without, you know, figuring out if the inputs are correct is a long process. And it's a fun one. Each week we get to go through guy by guy and figure out, if all of our assumptions are accurate.
Well,
but, I mean, on the surface, the opportunity looks correct for Darkwa. 15 carries and 2.5 targets. I guess I would question, I wonder if that Minnesota, the Minnesota variables there are overly weighted based on a hot start to the season for them, or if that looks legit, it's just something we're going to have to look into.
Yeah. My guess is that it ends up becoming the defensive thing. Cause where Detroit is like near the bottom of the league against the rush and Minnesota is near the top. Like they're not going to be so far into the middle. And that's mostly where I could bring in most of my concern on Darkwa. Let's go into the quarterbacks for this week. This is a funny week because, we talked about this last podcast and people are pretty aware of it at this point. The schedule is so weird this week because there's a game on Thursday, that's normal, but then there's a Sunday morning game, which actually has a decent amount of fantasy implications to it, and then there's just a regular Sunday and then Monday. So there's a bunch of different slates you can play during this week. There's like a Thursday, Sunday, so we'll try to touch on a few guys from each of them because, I don't know, I think there is some value kind of going everywhere, especially with Thursday too. But the top of our quarterback, we have Cam Newton as the cash game play for the main slate. He goes up against Atlanta. Atlanta has really struggled on defense this year, carryover from last year. They rank pretty much, they're not last, but they're darn close to last in DVOA, really against just about anything this season. Do you see Cam as just like the highest floor, maybe even highest ceiling guy going into Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the role he's filled so far this season. Again, not a terrific performance against Minnesota last week. Like, if you looked at Cam's line and you saw 21 for 35 for 262 yards and 3 picks, you wouldn't be too psyched. But the thing about Cam is that, he went out there and had the 26 rushing yards and the touchdown. So that immediately now he's up to 16 fantasy points. And while that didn't help you for sure, it didn't kill you either. And so I think, if we establish that as sort of his floor, it's all upside after that. And we saw what he could do against the San Francisco defense. It's probably better than this Atlanta defense too. So I really do like Cam for this week, particularly in big tournaments where people are more likely to be off him after a tough performance last week.
Yeah, I actually think he ends up becoming like the chalk, maybe it's not the chalk quarterback on cash, really, really close. Just because there is some other value you can get at other positions this week. And the player pool is just a little bit smaller because of the buys plus the London game. So, he gets the nice matchup. So that's the only reason I think he ends up becoming a chalky play. I still think it's actually correct to play him in tournaments because I think he has probably as high a ceiling as anybody else on this slate. So, because we have it's a pretty steep drop off on the main slate from Cam to the next closest guy. So I can't imagine a scenario where I personally play anyone else. Our system will not recommend anyone else for cash games, and he's pretty much just lock and load territory. After him, for main slate consideration, we have Rivers against the Saints. Do you get worried about like Rivers' lack of they've lost so many guys at this point. Sure. So they've lost Woodhead, Allen, and Gates. It doesn't look like Gates is going to play again this week. Does this kind of thing worry you from a – I mean, eventually, at some point, you can just lose enough guys. Like, Rivers is a good quarterback, but you can just be without the talent. Is that a situation you see with Rivers?
Well, I mean, last week against Indianapolis, he still passed for 330 yards. And while he didn't get in the end zone, you know, and that is a little troubling. I'll segue on that briefly. I think a lot of people will look at that and say, bah, it's unlucky. You know, if he's going to pass for 330 yards, he's going to get in the end zone more often than not. And while I think that is true, you know, he is missing a lot of particularly his good short yardage targets, like Gates and Allen in particular, and Woodhead. So
right.
Missing all three of those guys, it does start to become difficult. But I mean, against Jacksonville, he went 17 for 24 and threw four touchdowns. So if you figure that, you know, he's not a favorite to throw four touchdowns on 15 fewer pass attempts with those other guys, one of those two is out of whack. I suspect that it's more likely that he's just still a good quarterback around that 70% completion rate, and that someone will cross that final yard into the end zone in this game. I mean, that seems to me to be the much more likely scenario, that he will get back up there and start scoring touchdowns again. Start scoring, tough to say. Start scoring.
The Chargers have the highest implied total on the week, and it's not so close. So they, you know, they're just projected to put up the most points. They're at home. New Orleans has proven just they cannot stop anybody on defense. And so,
yeah, so off the top of your head, I don't know if you've looked at this, but the difference between New Orleans and Atlanta's defense this season, how big a difference do you think that is obviously a loaded question.
I mean, they look.
New Orleans is significantly worse than Atlanta.
No, they're about the same. I would say they're
almost identical. Yeah. Like, one is giving up 433 yards a game. One's giving up 448. I mean, these are two equally horrible defenses. And you know, I think Rivers is obviously blatantly not as good a play as Cam Newton, just on a raw points perspective. But I think he's a plenty fine play, and just frankly, just a terrific value given how much cheaper he is.
He's the only reason I think Cam wouldn't be the chalk. I don't think anyone goes a different direction after those two guys, really, for cash games, and I think that's probably correct. And you know, New Orleans just has like that public perception of being bad too, which is correct. Like, so people, like, this is just multiple seasons now of people just understanding that the Saints, and they're coming off like a pretty high profile Monday night game where they just could not stop anybody. So no, I think Rivers in cash makes sense. Also, he's a reason I like playing multiple slates, because I'll play, you know, Newton early and then Rivers on in the 4 o'clock one and just get the value there. So I'm just like not so worried about it. But I think those two guys end up being just pretty much, those are the two highest percentage guys. And then there's going to be a drop off after them. We mentioned a couple other guys, and these are the ones that fall into the not totally on just the main slate. One is Andrew Luck against Jacksonville. Does it concern you at all? Jacksonville still has the same sort of like defensive woes that they had last year, although not as bad. You know, they're still well below average against the – excuse me, you know what? I take that back. They're above average this year at DVOA against the pass, so a little bit improved. Does it concern you when guys have to, like, you know, go do a massive time zone switch, play at a different time than they're used to? Does that factor in at all? I mean, it probably doesn't factor into our raw numbers, but does it factor into how you can, like, think about a player going in?
Well, I try to be off the hashtag narrative street on some of this stuff. I mean, because I think people can get really overblown with some of these contextual factors. I will say, I'm not a world traveler, but I always hear people complaining about how tired they feel when they travel.
So yeah.
I, you know, as a world traveler yourself, you probably know this better than I do. But I would say
I always feel tired, and I've traveled a lot. So
there we go. Thank you. Well, that's like when we used to call my dad for the weather reports back in the day. You know? My dad, in case you guys didn't know, was a meteorology. He got his master's in meteorology from University of Wisconsin.
Well, this is hashtag nobody cares. So keep going.
Yeah, no, hashtag everybody cares, and hashtag watch your mouth, buddy. So yeah, I'd say that this is more than just narrative, though. It has to affect your physiology to get banged up and get knocked all over the place and then cram your 6'5 body onto a plane and fly it over someplace and try to play football. So, and earlier than you're used to too, like that 9 a.m. game, it's just significantly earlier for guys who are well-oiled machines that used to doing the same thing every week. So yeah, I'm definitely concerned about it. I do think though that on some level it's so over. Like, the thing that's probably more relevant is that Jacksonville's just bad. So that's, like, no matter how tired he is, he's probably going to be able to beat Jacksonville. So I'm not super, super worried about it. But yeah, it's on my radar.
Yeah, the guy that pushes up against him probably for like the Thursday, Sunday slate is Dalton. Actually, Bortles too, to some degree. I mean, like, there's just a bunch of bad between Miami, Indy, and Jacksonville. There's just three defenses that just can't stop a whole lot of stuff. So I think you have some. There could be a three-way sort of just split between those guys, probably more toward Luck and Dalton. Dalton's one of those guys that ends up playing on a Thursday night that people will probably just play more because of the Thursday factor, and it ends up probably and being correct, honestly. Just
so
because.
Can we talk about Jacksonville for a quick second? Because yeah. I'm a little bit I call Jacksonville a bad defense too. I wonder if we're perhaps overrating last season's performance by Jacksonville more than what they've actually done this year. Because so against three teams this year, so Green Bay, San Diego, and Baltimore, they have lost every game. Right. That's obviously not a good start. But their top, let's see, they've only allowed 311 total yards per game on the season. That's nothing. That's the eighth fewest in the whole NFL. So, I mean, is that simply because they've just been getting blown out and teams don't need to keep grinding on them? What are you seeing there?
Yeah, I mean, right now in our system, we have Jacksonville as basically just like a league average team against the pass, which is clearly a massive upgrade from them from last year. Right. So, I think that's generally correct. It's hard to know exactly, like, game scripty wise, why that has happened. They've only really been blown out once, though. I didn't really go back and look at how much of that was sort of come from behind. I know there's a narrative about Bortles just only being a come from behind quarterback that is come from behind, meaning like he only puts up stats when he does stuff. So they will kind of like shorten the lead late in games. But I think that's generally correct on our thing with Bortles, with Jacksonville as league average. This Thursday Sunday slate is interesting to me. I think those three quarterbacks are all in play for different reasons. You know, we talked a little bit about Rivers off air. Just Rivers looks maybe a little bit less like a value only because his price has come up only so much since the beginning of the season. He was like a $7,400, $7,200 quarterback to start the season, and he's done nothing but climb, even though the yards really haven't totally been there. So I don't know. It's interesting. I think it's closer than I maybe thought originally on quarterbacks going in.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
All right, with running backs, we have a couple cheaper options, I think, this week, though there are a couple, maybe there's one guy that we probably should have written up that we didn't, which we'll get to. But we started off, the two top guys that we have in our picks article are LeGarrette Blount and Melvin Gordon. Who do you see of those guys? They're both priced in the same 75, 76 on FanDuel, though Blount is a much better deal on DraftKings. For FanDuel, if you were to start one of those guys, who would it be, Blount or Gordon, you think?
Well, I want to start both, so, but I get that not everyone's going to be able to do that. To me, they kind of operate in different spaces on some level. So I think the Blount is arguably safer. I think, you know, he's got a more solid track record of providing the yards per carry that you want. There's really no competition for his role there. On the same token, though, Gordon has got a phenomenal matchup with New Orleans and could really go off. So I think I'll probably wind up going with Gordon. I think the upside is a little higher there. But, you know, the last game's performance of, what was it, 16 carries, 35 yards, and only four receptions was pretty troubling. So I do think, though, that last game's performance was something like his floor, like the 15.8 points. Yes, he did get in the end zone, so maybe he can go even lower, but I think he'll be used in both the passing and the running game, whereas Blount is really only a ball carrier. Yeah, it's tough, though, because Blount really is an elite, elite opportunity guy. Like the 22, 29, and 24 rushing attempts, very legit, and wouldn't shock me to see him, you know, once again slide into one of the top running back roles of the week.
Yeah, and I think on DraftKings it's such a cheap price at 5,000 if you think he's going to get in those mid 20s worth of carries. I think Gordon ends up becoming chalk across the board on the main slate. He's just, all the contextual pieces are in line for him, from the opportunity to the matchup and really the game script too, with San Diego being favored going into that game. They're -4, which definitely helps them from a just maybe floor running game possibility. I like them both. I would definitely choose Gordon over FanDuel on FanDuel just because of mostly he's going to be chalk, and our system just likes him better in general. The other guy we mentioned, we started talking about him earlier in the podcast with the no halftime thing, was Jordan Howard. Jordan Howard looks like he's going to step into an every down role with the Lions against Detroit this week. He's very cheap, 56 on FanDuel, 37 on DraftKings. You know, we talk about some of the reasons why we feel sort of comfortable with a play like him, even if the Bears stand to maybe even get blown out. I don't know if they get blown out, but stand to lose this game.
Well, they lost last game, and we saw Howard get in there and get 13 touches. I think what we really like about Howard is, even when behind, the Bears have always historically wanted to pass the ball out of the backfield to try and, you know, you know, it's kind of like a mid-range approach where they don't want to run it, but they don't want to bomb it downfield. Maybe they don't feel like they have the tools or don't trust the quarterback or whatever. So, yeah, the four receptions for 47 yards, very encouraging, especially, again, this is a price play, right? So if Howard is going to only be 5,600 and he's going to be 2,000 less than a guy like Melvin Gordon, I mean, it's in play that Howard is just as good as any of those other guys. And when that's a possibility, when that's what the upside is for him to be as good as Gordon or Blunt, then he's going to be a very strong consideration in formats that, you know, value safety. And so I value safety very highly, obviously, for my cash game plays. I think Howard provides that. It'd be very hard for him to get fewer than, say, 10 fantasy points if he were the starting running back and the third down back as well. So, yeah, I really like him. I think, you know, we'll need some more news on Darkwa, but he's probably the best, certainly on DraftKings, is the best cheap running back play of the day. And, you know, I can be convinced that he's the best value play anywhere.
Yeah, the Detroit ranks 27th in DVOA against the rush this year. So they're just not, I know they're favored here, but it's not, they're not favored to the point where they probably should be, considering the Bears are coming in with possibly a backup quarterback and without their starting running back. So, you know, they're only minus -3. It's at Chicago. The total's low. I really like the floor on Howard. And we, you know, you mentioned the receptions out of the backfield, which is a pretty big thing if he's going to be an every down back. One guy that I think we probably should have written up and we didn't was Lamar Miller. Miller is a guy that the Texans come in as minus -5 against Tennessee. That might have switched a little bit with JJ Watt being out now for the Tennessee side of the ball. It doesn't really affect Houston's overall implied total at all, but it could just swing. I think it might have swung the Titans a little closer. Miller is an insane usage guy. He maybe, you could probably make a case that he's been like run a little bad in terms of overall points, considering how many just total touches he's seen this season.
Yeah, there's no touchdowns. That's
right, exactly. He saw the touches dip a little bit last week, but New England, that was some bad luck in the sense that they fumbled.
He still touched about 25 times.
Exactly. Is he a guy that we maybe missed the boat and should have written up?
Nah, I don't think so, just because the value on, I mean, he's still a good play. I think I like him very much, but the problem is that he's competing for a spot with Blunt and Gordon. And so, you know, given that Gordon, I think Gordon is essentially the same guy, frankly, and he's cheaper, and Blunt likewise. I mean, Blunt might even be a better proxy just because he's another one of those huge usage guys. If you're looking for safe guys that are going to carry the ball a ton, Blunt is, I think, just simply a better play. Now, if you want to tell me that you should play both and you shouldn't go cheap with Jordan Howard, I think I'm listening there. So in that way, I think Miller, there might be a home for Miller, but in a world where you can get Gordon for 76 and Jordan Howard for 56 and Blunt for 75 or 76, it just doesn't, for me, I think Miller's arguably just tied with those guys. So I don't know why I would pay a premium for that kind of production.
Okay, so let's move on to wide receivers. Wide receivers, interesting this week. We have a couple, you know, we start off with just a guy that I'm not sure we're going to copy and paste him every week, but it sure seems like we're going to.
Pin it to the top.
Yeah, I mean, sort of. Antonio Brown remains, at this point, really one of the very few guys who carried over from the elite target to elite target from year over year. It didn't happen. It hasn't happened with some of the other guys like Beckham and Jones that you thought it was going to. Maybe more with Jones. Hopkins is another guy who's dipped a fair amount in terms of overall targets. Antonio Brown has not. He remains in that elite class. Is he a guy that we should just be, at this point, sort of locking and loading, almost price independent? He's very expensive, 94 on FanDuel, 97 on DraftKings, but is the floor just good enough that you can consider it even with Le'Veon Bell back this week?
Well, I guess you baited me there with the price independent, matchup proof sort of language, because, you know, that's a big pet peeve of mine forever. But I think that Brown is as close to that as anyone in the NFL. I think that he's, you know, just obviously a really, really good play in the 9,000s range, because, I mean, you mentioned this, but there really haven't been a lot of carryovers from last year's elite target guys into this year's elite target guys. I mean, we look at the top target guys from last season, which was Brown and Hopkins and Jones, and Jones has obviously fallen off a cliff. Hopkins sort of nowhere to be found as well, given that they have a strong wide receiver two option. Brown really didn't get that. You know, in fact, they went the other direction. They lost Heath Miller and they lost Martavis Bryant. So I think that Brown is kind of standing on top of the mountain there. Yeah, Bell is back. They're talking about even passing to Bell a little bit more. But I think Brown is still going to be you know, in the easy double digits, you know, leaning towards mid double digits targets. And that's just where you want to be when you have a guy that can haul in a lot of those targets and run afterwards. You know, he's just a terrific play.
It's interesting with Kansas. They play Kansas City this week. Now, according to DVOA, which is a number that we like to use.
The number from Football Outsiders, which essentially values, you know, we mentioned that stat a lot. We haven't really explained it. It essentially values, you know, what happens on a per play basis to really dumb it down. So on a per pass basis, how does Kansas City perform against wide receiver ones, for instance?
And according to DVOA, they're number one against the pass and number one or number two against wide receiver ones. The system still likes
that seems good.
That does seem good. The system still likes Brown, and it's mostly just because of the overall volume that he stands to see, which is just much more, it's just a higher implied volume than really anybody else. At what point does the matchup trump the amount of looks he might get?
Well, I think it winds up playing worse for Brown if there's a true, true shutdown corner involved. And even then, you know, we saw what he was able to do against Norman and the Redskins in week one. I mean, it's just, he just probably is going to be a play. Maybe he's really is just matchup proof of those numbers. Worth noting on that Chiefs ranking, I mean, they really haven't played phenomenal wide receiver ones this season. So they got Chicago with Alshon, or no, I'm sorry, that was in the preseason. So it still holds true, so don't worry. They got San Diego in week one, and worth noting that they were getting torn up by Keenan Allen before Keenan Allen disappeared. Then they had Houston in week two. We mentioned DeAndre Hopkins is off to a very, very slow start this season. And then they had the Jets in week three with Brandon Marshall banged up. So I'm just not sure we can take too much from that short season on stats from the Chiefs. Does that follow logically for you?
Yeah, no, that's where the small sample size gets into a little bit of a trouble zone because of that very reason. You need to sort of look at the contextual pieces. Like, for instance, if DVOA was calculating Keenan Allen as the wide receiver one there, and they didn't factor in that he only played half the game. I mean, he was on pace to just totally destroy them, right?
This is the trouble with using anyone else's, you know, anyone else's metrics that involve some level of subjectivity, and even something, I mean, it sounds small, but even deciding who the wide receiver one is, like we go through this all the time, involves a serious amount of subjectivity.
Right.
So I think that, yeah, I mean, they did shut down Brandon Marshall, but again, there were those injury concerns there. He still did garner 10 targets, just didn't reel him in. The Jets obviously have their own quarterback questions and whatnot. So I think this will be, I mean, the Roethlisberger-Brown connection is going to be totally unlike anything the Chiefs have faced this season. And I suspect it'll be their worst performance of the season against wide receiver ones going away.
Yeah, the Chiefs, while ranked decent against wide receiver ones, still do allow a lot of pass attempts to that side. So anyway, and I think there's a pretty strong case for Brown. And this is why you need to look into multiple inputs when it comes to just how to evaluate a play versus specific defense. After him, there are a couple other guys that we have written up. One is Larry Fitzgerald. He's got a questionable tag on him now, though I expect him to play. Michael Floyd is clear concussion protocol, which means they have their full wide receiver depth in play going into this week. Fitzgerald's been a guy who they've been happy to just throw to double digit times almost a game at this point. Does he seem just like a really high floor guy, and maybe the rest of the industry just won't see him as having that sort of implied safety?
I think he does. I mean, he's really risen to the top, back to the top, as usual, of the targets heap in Arizona. And yeah, he's not explosive. He's not flashy at this point in his career, but he's been steady right there in that 16 to 17% in terms of his target percentage. You know, he's catching double digit yards per catch, which is fine for a slot guy. He's kind of like a rich man's Cole Beasley or something. And I don't mean to damn him with faint praise there. You know, that really is worth something in DFS, particularly because he's the chief red zone target. You know, the other guys they have, both Floyd and Brown, are more downfield guys. And when the field shortens up, Fitzgerald's tight route running, you know, big body, good hands really are what Arizona wants to see down low. So I think that he'll have another solid game here.
Yeah, it's funny, but Arizona's a really hard team to evaluate because they've just played a very up and down season so far where they have this sort of unbelievable loss, I would say, to the Patriots week one. Then they just run Tampa Bay basically out of the building week two, 40-7, and then somehow just kind of get crushed by Buffalo last week. And it's just so – it's hard to know what team Arizona is. The good news is in all of those scenarios, Fitzgerald saw a decent amount of volume. So, like, he saw fine volume.
That's exactly it. Like, they're going to – like, he's part of the plan no matter what. He's part of the plan to – run up the lead. If the lead is there, he's part of the plan to come back if they're down. So it's just like, you can't always bomb the ball downfield, even when you're behind. You don't want to bomb the ball downfield when you're ahead. So I think, I think he's, it doesn't really matter. The game's, he's kind of game script proof in that way.
Yeah, those possession guys, and that's really the, that's the safety in those possession guys, right? Because in that, in that 40-7 week, the 40-7 game, he had 10 targets, right? He only converted 5 of them, but again, they won by 33, and they were up 24-0 at halftime. So it wasn't like they just like kind of piled on late. He saw 10 targets. He only converted 5 of them, but 5 for 77 and a touchdown. That's just a lot of safety. I don't think people see, or I don't think if you look across the industry, he's just not a guy that you, when you look at, because like you look at other guys, you're like, okay, well, am I going to play him or am I going to play like Mike Evans? Well, I think most people would be like, well, Mike Evans is like the upside guy, right? Or like him or Allen Robinson. People, you know, Allen Robinson's the upside guy, but Fitzgerald, is just the floor is so much higher than a lot of these guys just because, like you said, he's part of the plan no matter what. The last guy we had on the list was Terrell Pryor. Pryor is a guy we discussed a lot last podcast. I suspect he is the highest owned player on DraftKings this week at only 4,300. The FanDuel price is much closer, I would say, to a real one at 7,000. Like in the sense that real one meaning, I think the DraftKings price is a mistake considering sort of his.
Yes. He'll be 100% owned.
Yes, considering his opportunity. Again, FanDuel a little closer. He's more in that mid range wide receiver. Is he just a cash game play across the board considering how the Browns probably plan on using him?
It sure seems like it, right? I mean, he was involved in 23 total plays. I mean, that's, you just don't get that kind of production for 7,000 on FanDuel. I mean, forget the 4,300 again is a joke. It's super, super cheap. But even at 7,000, like getting 14 targets in a given game, that's, you know, a top 5 performance on the season. And he piled on passing attempts and running attempts and a rushing touchdown. Like he's going to definitely, I mean, it's clear that I wrote about this in the article, but he really does seem to be like their best guy on their high school team who's just going to be involved in every single part of the game, and they'll probably lose, but they're enjoying it. So I don't, there's no reason for them to shift away from it now. It's not like they're competitive anyway. So doing this gimmicky, you know, he's the new RG3 sort of guy is just what they're up to, it looks like.
Yeah, he's kind of like a poor man's Larry Fitzgerald in the sense that he stands to be part of their plan no matter what's happening in the game, if they're up or they're down. And he's funny, too, because he's the first – I might have to do it with Edelman, too, but he's one of the first running backs – jeez, wide receivers that we had to just go in and give pass attempts to in terms of the projection system, which is always fun. So the he's one of those just true – totally different kind of players at this point, more like a college player in a sense, but I love the floor on him. I was wrong about being the last guy's wide receivers. Another guy we had was Doug Baldwin. Baldwin's a guy that drives me crazy because we were so high on him going into week 2 and he just kind of disappeared because of the injury. Comes back with a flourish in week 3 where he goes something like 8 for mid
164.
Yeah, 164 and a touchdown. Is he back to just being, or did he really never leave that sort of elite target territory guy for Wilson? And where do you see Baldwin as compared to maybe some of the other guys we mentioned before?
Well, I mean, Baldwin, of course, highlights the danger in looking at small sample sizes. I mean, we had a whole season's worth of sample size going into week 1, and he was great against Miami. We now had whole season plus one game, and then he had a bad week against LA, and I think everyone, including us, panicked a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he went back and just did his thing last game. You know, he's always going to be the most targeted guy on Seattle, even with Jimmy Graham, you know, lurking back into being healthy. There's actually additional injury concerns going into this week with Tyler Lockett. So I think Baldwin's role just continues to be even more secure. And Baldwin, I think, is a better comp for Larry Fitzgerald than Terrell Pryor, actually, because Baldwin is really Seattle's version of him. I mean, they don't really have the long field or the downfield threats that the Cardinals do, but they just don't care. Like, they just only pass short passes, really. Right. So I think you're going to see, I mean, I guess Lockett would be that guy, but Baldwin's going to be involved no matter what. 7,400. He's an even bigger red zone threat than Fitzgerald, and I think he's a terrific value. Now, there obviously is some concern here with Darrell Revis. Revis has been somewhat limited in practice and is probably not quite the same Revis that we're used to from the past, but that is a concern. I will say that Revis is not really, he doesn't normally shadow guys like Doug Baldwin. Normally he's really a specialist at chasing the downfield guys, and given Seattle's general lack of those, I'm not sure what the Jets are going to do with Revis this week, if he even does play. So that's a wait and see moment for me. It might make Baldwin more of a big tournament play, but yeah, no, I like Baldwin playing.
Revis has had a couple of issues this year, though. I will say, I think it's somewhere in the middle on him because they're ranked about middle of the pack in terms of, he got lit up by AJ Green the first week, but then the overall pass attempts per game from the wide receiver one position to the Jets is really low compared to league average. And there just ends up being about league average. So I think Revis is clearly not the Revis of old, but I also don't think he's just a bum that can't follow anybody around. The other issue with Baldwin last week wasn't so much of the trusting sample size over it. It was that I think there was some injury concerns going in. Like, he had played hurt the week before, and that was actually more of why we downgraded him going into last week. That clearly seems to be over now. So I think you can lock and load him. AJ.
Yeah, I think an interesting note on Revis really quick.
Yeah.
So if you look at just Revis's Roto World history, so I just pulled this up just to, again, as a sanity check. So this is from August through today. Darrell Revis finally cleared for team drills. Okay, not great. Darrell Revis roasted by AJ Green week one. Next week, Todd Bowles not concerned with Darrell Revis.
Right.
And from today, Darrell Revis injures ankle in practice. So none of these are great things. I think that basically Revis, you know, we've seen this happen in the past where super, super elite cover corners turn into just a guy pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure we're ready to say that on Revis yet, but the guy's 31 years old. You know, he's not. This isn't 10 years ago. So I think that, you know, we could be entering that territory. I'm not really factoring him in nearly as much as I am just general team data in a situation like that.
Yeah. And just as in terms of our multipliers, we have Revis as basically just the guy at this point. Like, he's like, or I mean, assuming that that's the guy who's doing covering their WR1, which he is, the inputs on Baldwin have the Jets just about league average from that specific metric. Yep. The other guy that we have mentioned here, and I think it's just, it's a Thursday only play, but he'll probably be chalk, AJ Green. He gets to go against a Dolphins team that has just struggled against the pass in general. They seem to have the same issues this year as they did last year. He's another decent target, not even decent. He's kind of reemerged in terms of that target thing because they are having the same issues that they had before. Was they just don't have another wide receiver to throw to as much as him. So with Sanu gone, Tyler Boyd has not really emerged at that point. They've had some tight end issues. Is AJ Green sort of back into that elite category of guys that just are going to get heavily targeted during games?
Well, he is. And actually, there's two other guys I just want to touch on after we talk about AJ Green, okay, understanding that we're going deep on the position here. But yeah, so Green with 32 targets, that's good for tied for fifth in the league with Larry Fitzgerald. There is some stuff that looks a little bit out of whack to me. So, like, for instance, he's had a higher conversion percentage on receptions to targets than Fitzgerald has. I suspect that will swing back in the other direction. But he also is one of the top guys in terms of yards per catch. And I think that, you know, is a little bit more sustainable. I think worth noting on AJ Green, too, is that it's been a fairly tough schedule for him. I mean, he had Revis in week one before any injury concerns. He had Pittsburgh in week two and then Denver in week three. So Green, you know, not priced in that upper tier of wide receivers yet. He's only 8,100 on FanDuel. I think that you could see him climb back up into elite territory. I mean, when Green was healthy in the past, he was more like an $8,800 receiver. I suspect that we're looking one way or the other. This is probably Green's cheapest price for the rest of the season. So I think if you're going to be a buyer on AJ Green, now is certainly the time to do so. And I suspect big things from him against Miami and a lot of conversations about him being in that top tier going into week five.
I think on the Thursday slate, he's the highest owned wide receiver. And I don't think it's just because between the Thursday. Between the Thursday narrative, the Dolphins, he's been good this season. I think he'll be. Yeah, just for that one, for tonight's sure. specific slate, he'll be the highest owned receiver.
Yeah, and we're cool with that. I guess what we're saying totally. Really, again, yeah, we caution against playing guys on the Thursday game. But yeah, Green is a fine play if you're playing the Thursday slate.
If he was on the main slate, he would be a cash game play for us easy. Who are the guys that I forgot that you wanted to mention?
No problem. So it's like, I don't know that you forgot them necessarily, but two guys I wanted to highlight because I think a lot of the guys we've talked about so far have been high safety guys. And while it's great to be good in cash games, you know, we always counsel our users to really focus on allocating a big portion of their bankroll into 50-50s and double ups, just because, you know, I always make this comparison, but if you were playing in a 10-team fantasy league, you wouldn't be disappointed, or you wouldn't consider it a completely failed season if you didn't win, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you weren't first place out of 10 among your 10 friends. Now, maybe you have more on friends and you would be disappointed. I'm not sure, but to win a GPP or a big tournament, to even cash in those, you have to be in the top 10%, which is like winning your season-long league. Very difficult to do. So while you can do it, it's very, very hard to do so. Now, the way you win big tournaments is much the same way you win those season-long leagues with your friends, which is getting guys that are undervalued relative to how everyone else perceives them based on the upside they might possess. So two guys I want to highlight in that regard for going into this week are Mike Evans and T.Y. Hilton. Mm-hmm. Evans and Hilton are second and third in the league in targets, respectively, and I don't know that many people picture them that way. And that's because they don't actually turn a lot of those targets into receptions, relatively speaking. The thing about, you know, so both of them are, I mean, Hilton in particular has always been kind of an egregious guy when it comes to converting targets into receptions. But both are still top 11 in the league in terms of overall receptions. Evans, of course, ranking in fourth place there. And both, I think, offer the same package, which is there are going to be weeks, and we've seen this from both of them so far, where they actually run hot and do convert. You know, the balls are landing in their hands. Their quarterbacks are able to find them downfield, and they wind up putting up huge totals. So both are just guys I would want to highlight for big tournaments. I think Evans in particular, just because he has a hard matchup and he'll be off a lot of radars. But yeah, I think both could be. Don't be surprised if either is part of a winning big tournament lineup. It's just a caveat I wanted to throw out there before we moved on to tight end.
Yeah, and the guy that I'm going to mention there too, which is off board, maybe we could have saved this for the game-by-game breakdown, is Kelvin Benjamin. So Benjamin's coming off a week where he only only had one target. And if you're a game log maven, you look at that and you have major concerns. And I do too, and this is why we don't have him in terms of cash game plays at this point. That being said, there's been a lot of rhetoric coming out of the Panther camp this week that they've just kind of said, oh, we made a mistake with him. The coaches took it a lot on their shoulders why he didn't get the ball. And I just read another note that said, you know, he's not going to be held catchless again. I think a lot of this points to him coming back toward what we saw earlier in the season in terms of targets. Like, there's not really any injury concerns. They played Minnesota last week. Minnesota has a good defense. I could see rebounding really pretty highly would be a guy like Benjamin. I love pairing him with Newton in tournaments going into this week. And that's just, and he's not necessarily a cash game play, because I think that one target thing is a huge red flag in terms of just how he's going to be used. So not a cash game play, but for me, definitely a tournament. Let's go finish it off with tight ends here. We have a couple guys. I think the list for tight ends is actually pretty short, all things considered, this week. We wrote up Zach Miller and Colby Fleener. Walk me through the thought process on both of these guys.
Yeah, well, I think it's a continuation on the theme that tight end has been really shallow this season. I mean, Fleener was a guy a lot of people were really high on going into the season. And then after he proceeded to lay back-to-back eggs in good matchups against the Giants and the Raiders, people were totally off it. After Fast Willie Snead went down going into week three, and we should have probably mentioned Michael Thomas as a value play too, although I suspect we'll go deeper into that for the game-by-game breakdown. But going into week three against Atlanta, he just went off for 7 receptions, 107 yards, or 109 yards rather, and a touch. And, you know, of interesting note is that he had 17% of his team's targets, but also had that in the previous week too. So while he didn't convert those into receptions in week two against the Giants, it does look like this is sort of part of the Saints' plan. And if he's going to be, you know, targeted that highly in a high-powered, you know, high-octane offense there, he's just going to be a terrific play. I wouldn't be surprised if he is the most owned tight end of the week on FanDuel, and that's probably correct.
No, I think I'm totally with you there. He's a little Snead dependent in the sense that Snead was a decent target guy. Did not play last week. We'll have more information on that as we get a little closer to Sunday, hopefully even by...
He might be Snead dependent, but again, he had 17% of the team's targets even when Snead was going off in the previous week. So I think that, yeah, it is dependent, but I think that that's actually a situation where if Snead comes back, people might actually weight that too heavily, and that, you know, it might not make as big of a difference as many people think.
Another cheap guy that we had on there was Zach Miller. He's only 2,500 on DraftKings, and I think only in the 4,000s or no, 5,000 on FanDuel. He saw increased targets last week, though that was from Brian Hoyer. Does it matter for you on Miller who the quarterback is? Like, if do you like him more if it's Hoyer who threw him the ball more last week, or if Cutler is back this week, do you maybe downgrade Miller a little bit?
No, it definitely matters who the quarterback is. I mean, on FanDuel in particular, because if you can get Fleener for just $400 more, that's probably just what you should do. And again, it's funny because it's the same exact situations on DraftKings. You can make an argument for playing both on DraftKings. I mean, $2,700 for Miller is so cheap that maybe it doesn't matter totally. But yeah, I mean, on Miller, you didn't see that big of a target percentage difference in weeks two and three. So he had 14% of his team's targets against Dallas and only 12% against Philly. But, you know, in that situation, you're really splitting hairs. I think the snaps were also just a really welcome sign. So he had played 65 snaps, which was his highest total by 22 snaps in the last game. So if the Bears are just trusting him more, and if they're going to use him in both blocking and passing, it just opens up a lot more opportunity for him. So I think he's fine. I guess it's a long, really, really long answer to a short question, which is, yes, I would be happy to play him with either Cutler or Hoyer this week.
Yeah, I think there's some case on DraftKings, not really so much on FanDuel, but for paying up for, if you could find enough value other places, you can maybe make a case to pay up for Olsen, which I don't think a lot of other people will do, especially if you think that Benjamin is just not going to return to form in terms of targets, but that's more of probably a tournament play. All right, that is it for us today. We'll be back again tomorrow with a full game-by-game breakdown of every single game on the Sunday slate of games. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head on over. You can get a package for $29.95 a month that includes our projections for NFL. It also allows you to one-touch calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. That also includes MLB projections, NBA, and NHL. When that time comes around, only a few short weeks away for each of those sports. So really, about the best deal I think you can get in the industry. If you want just testimonials, head over to the site too and go into the chat room where we have our users chatting every single day, really just about every sport. Just ask them how DFSR has treated them. They will give you a better sales pitch than we ever could. So like I said, $29.95 a month for everything under that umbrella. Buddy, I will talk to you again tomorrow.
Yeah, man, can't wait.
Oof, you didn't sound as excited as I thought you were going to do. Buddy, I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Yeah, man, can't wait.
There we go. Take it easy, everybody.